repeatedly cited the United States for having a two-tier society when it comes to the educational system, the economic system, and the criminal justice system. Everyone kind of knows about the joke except for us. And so when you talk about a kid like Ethan Couch, I'd say that the best cure for his affluenza would be prison. And I think most people know that. And I think we have to understand that this judge is just one judge who made a bad decision. But at the same time, it could be something that could be applied all across the country, because most studies show that disparate sentencing does exist between races and between people with different socioeconomic statuses.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you both for being with us. Boyce Watkins, Syracuse University professor, founded yourblackworld.net, wrote, "Rich white kids have affluenza. Poor black kids go to prison." Thank you so much to Richard Alpert, Tarrant County Assistant District Attorney, one of the prosecutors in the affluenza case. That does it for the broadcast. You can go to our website for the transcript or the video or audio podcast. Marks and are produced by Mike Berker, Nick Felser, Martin Newman, Shakespeare Martinez, Sam Alcopani, Masood Robbie, Karandina Gazdar. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. It's not the same as last week. No, it's why you got to listen every week. This is our public affairs show. We talk about current events, local issues for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Coming to you live from Henry Ford Community College, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. My name is Jay Koronick, and joining me again, as usual, in the studio is our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars. Welcome, Dennis. Cold enough for you out there?
Always cold enough for me. You know, we complain, but there's no place I'd rather be than Dearborn, Michigan right now. Today is Friday, February 7th, 2014.
Yes,
and let me just get it out of the way, because we have a good, really good show planned. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college.
Uh-oh, now we got to have opinions?
You know,
there are going to be opinions. Now we've got to find some opinions. Oh, my God. Okay, no, they'll come up. You know how they do.
Yeah, whatever we don't know, we make up.
So. That's it, exactly. Okay. Looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald, first of all, luckily they have a website, pressandguide.com, but I didn't get a Wednesday paper. I want to complain on the air because I called the circulation department. I haven't gotten two Wednesday papers out of the last 3 weeks. And so I wonder if they're going to have a Wednesday edition in the future, or is it just that I'm not getting it? They don't want me to know, I guess, what's
just
going on.
Because you're paranoid.
We're jumping to the story that they picked up early last weekend and was obvious to me online earlier this week, and the Dearborn Times Herald from this Wednesday, whose edition I did get. Patch.com, effectively, is not a news source anymore. No. They laid off editors in Dearborn and throughout Southeast Michigan. Want to do the story, Dennis?
I kind of do, yeah.
Okay.
You know, and we were fortunate to have their first editor, Jessica Carreras. She was on the show live shortly after she took over. According to the article by Bob Oliver in the Times Herald, I got this offline today, the editors of Patch websites nationwide, including the editor in Dearborn and there's 29 other locations in Michigan, which I did not know. Yeah. They're all laid off last week by Hale Global. That's the majority stakeholder of the company. According to published reports, employees of Patch took part in a conference call on January 29th. And, of course, everything was explained to them in the conference call, which the layoffs began immediately. Jay, here's what they got for they were let go, but the severance package they got included a yearly bonus. So every year they'd get a bonus based on what, I'm not sure, or percentage or what. They got a payout for accrued vacation time. So if you didn't take vacations and you had some saved up, you did get paid for that. And then 2 months of severance pay. I thought that was rather generous for what seemed like a sinking ship for a long time, as they were cutting back and cutting back and cutting back.
Well, it's also generous because it's AOL who was their corporate owner.
That's right.
In fact, if you remember the story that we did 3 years ago, AOL actually appointed to be their co-presidents. They brought these two guys in whose primary claim to fame was the fact that they created Patch.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so AOL still exists. I guess those guys are still at the top of AOL. But AOL sold Patch.com, which was what gave them a chance to become the head of AOL. And they sold it to
Hale Global.
Hale Global, which is an investment holding company. And you know how well Chrysler Corporation did. Remember when they were sold to an investment holding company?
Well, if I'm not mistaken.
That was right before they went belly up, and we had to do the bailout, and Fiat had to buy them. So
typically, you'll have two different types of company, an investment company or a management company. Management most likely will keep going. Whatever the business is, they'll keep going. Mm-hmm. Investment companies, on the other hand, to piece things
apart. They only had Patch.com for 3 months. They bought it 3 months ago. And then they decide to fire all these people. Do they have a new business plan?
It wasn't 3 months ago. It was 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, only 3 weeks ago. So they knew they were going to, after they bought it, mm-hmm. get rid of it. Now, it was because maybe they have collected all these email addresses, like they got mine, and I still get these non-news sort of like ads every day, and I'm gonna stop that right away because that's not why I gave them my address.
Right.
So, but I can't figure out what they're gonna do with that. I mean, how they're gonna? I don't think they're gonna go back to their hyper local, that is very very local news focus, and
which we loved.
Well, I thought it was done so well. Jessica Carreras comments. I don't know if she did there in Press and Guy, but for Times Herald. She says she was very surprised to hear about it, which means that although she's working with the city of Dearborn now, so she wasn't involved in, let's say, the finances, how are they doing with ad sales and so on recently. But she's only been gone for, 6 months?
Something like that.
To the city. So she says it's disheartening, and we think any less local news, and I've always said here on the show that what matters to you most is right next door. That's local. That's very hyper-local. But that's really what we're always most concerned about, as well as all the other issues that are thrown at us, even on the international level. But
it would appear that Anthony Lai got out who was the former editor? Before the
right, Lai's brother.
Exactly. Anthony's he's here at the college. His brother, Daniel mm-hmm. Lai, and he got a real good position, I think, with Access?
Yes, with Access.
And he got out just in time, it's looking like.
Yes, maybe he saw the so-called writing on the wall when they sold. This was before they sold, but maybe he knew about negotiations to sell it.
Yep.
And but I don't think you can ever trust an investment holding company to continue anything good in an area that is very specialized, like news.
Especially
or
now.
Making Chrysler cars.
As this news model is evolving on a regular basis. I mean, we've seen some successful models. I thought Patch mm-hmm. was one of those, especially with some of the... Didn't AOL also own Huffington Post?
They may still. I don't remember.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that wasn't their first venture in the news business.
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we... we mourn the loss.
Seriously.
It's like, and until something else good happens, because, hey, we are local news. We are hyper-local. We were hyper-local before. In fact, because of the way we cover it, without even any paid reporters, we can usually get to the stories before the Press and Guide and the Times Herald. Although, of course, the Press and Guide does have an active website to share with Heritage.
Right.
They get the stories up now just about as soon as they're written. God bless them. They used to wait because they wanted people to buy the paper. They used to wait to put the story up after the paper came out so that you would be wanting to get a print subscription anyway. But that's just the wrong model. I mean, you should get both, folks. You should get the email if you subscribe, certainly. And you should also get the printed paper because that's how they survive on the ads, not just the stories, but the ads. And I don't think banner ads probably get as much income as a print ad.
No, heck no.
Because a print ad, every time you open the page, it's there. Every second you get the page open, the ad is staring at you. So that's a lot of exposure time.
Sure. The advantage, obviously, online is every time you go to the website, those ads can stare at you and you can click on them. So, I mean, there's an inherent advantage. Here you'd have to call if you read the print.
If you wanted more information.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. So I like the idea of clicking. And it's also a great way to find out how well your ads are doing. is if they're getting clicked on.
So
that's too bad.
Rest in peace, Patch.com, at least the way it was. Maybe the holding company can
sell it to somebody.
Weren't they a band behind Janis Joplin? Anyway, we're always looking for a positive upswing here. But anyway, so they're gone. Now, also, this is disturbing to me, and I've got this like a correction. Maybe last week we were waxing poetical about how it would be great if we did have a microbrewery that started in West End Dearborn.
Sure.
Okay, the full story here, folks.
Here we go.
Also from the Times Herald. And this is why we love papers, because they write a lot of words usually, and God bless them, they're continuing locally to print a lot of words, all they can get, because they got to fill up the space. You know, and they don't have that many reporters, you know, to keep competing for space. Anyway, Bob Oliver tells us that this new brewery is going to be called Dearborn Brewing LLC. It'll be owned and operated by John Rucinski, R-U-C-I-N-S-K-I. It'd be open at 21930 Michigan Avenue, and I just don't know exactly where that address is right now, but it's in West Dearborn.
I thought we determined that was at the old Chelly's, right?
No, it's not. Well, it's not, but it might be near there.
Okay.
Well, he met with the city council, Mr. Rucinski, and Mayor John O'Reilly at the January 23rd study session to discuss the proposed business and its impact on the area. He told the council he had no intentions of opening a bar or restaurant that would strain the parking available for the block, and that he just wanted to be able to seat smaller groups of visitors who just want to sample the beer before leaving the business. Get this. Here's a quote. I'm aiming to capture the happy hour crowd who just wants to drink as quickly as possible, as much as possible, okay, who would stop in and have two or three beers before heading out the door. My success will hinge on getting my beer into local bars and restaurants. I don't want to be a big destination place. My main focus long term is distribution, not on-site sales.
Okay.
Well, it might work, but we were hoping for a combined microbrewery like Ann Arbor and, you know, Royal Oak and what's been successful elsewhere. So whenever it opens, folks, all you can do is drink, and
he doesn't really want
maybe
either.
That's good for you.
He wants to
and
turn
taste.
Him.
But then, if you want more, you got to go maybe to Westbourne Market or something
and
if
hope.
They decide to pick it up.
And hope
okay,
they carry it, sure.
And hope they carry it, because you'll have to buy it in bottles from them. It looks like he can set up rather quickly because he doesn't have that much stuff. He's rented a couple of vats or something, and so he won't even have much beer to drink if a lot of beer drinkers want to go there. So it seems, again, last week we were waxing poetical how great a microbrewery would be, but this is a drinking only sort of thing. You can't enjoy the beer, you can't socialize much. It's in and out, and then they'll maybe try to tell you where to buy the beer locally if anybody decides to pick up on it.
You know, my thing is, there would be a heck of a lot cheaper places to set up shop if your main focus was distribution.
Well, we know rental of space on West Dearborn, at least from certain owners of space there, is sky high.
And they won't, and they, even though it sits empty, they won't necessarily bring the price down.
No.
So I'm thinking, if this isn't a destination, you could do a little bit more
in fact,
cheaply.
There is I think it's a Japanese sushi place on Michigan Avenue. Formerly, it was a Dunkin' Donuts location.
Yep.
It was because the owner, I can mention his name because it's in the records, it's Mr. Newman.
Sure.
He kept raising the rent for them. And this is Dunkin' Donuts. So I don't know, are people not into donuts as much because of, trying to be more healthy or something? But Dunkin' Donuts was there for like 20 years or whatever. And finally, he pushed the rent up so high that they couldn't stay there.
Now, that's right.
Maybe the sushi place, because they charge more money per sushi dish than per donut would have. Then maybe they're making good. Obviously, it's a good location, very visible right there at the corner of the lot, and it's got free parking, of course, too.
I'm just saying. I want to say at one point that was the Detroit Bagel Company or something years and years and years ago.
Maybe.
No, you don't really? Oh, I thought you
don't remember. Yeah, so I'm just saying. That's business as usual. But yes, Dennis, for just selling beer, because you can't drink beer only at lunchtime, or can you? What is his hours going to be? He's at the happy hour crowd, so it's like 3 to 5.
Sure, 2 to 7.
He's only going to be open for for that, or I don't know, how can he make a profit there unless it's $10 a bottle or something?
I think that this gentleman would be an excellent guest on a future show. Well, I may extend the...
I don't want to give a commercial for anybody, but we have attacked him here viciously.
he's kidding.
I'm just attacking his business model. We can't seem to figure out how he's going to make a go of it.
And give Bob Oliver, was that in the Press and Guide or Times Herald?
This is in the Times Herald.
So give Bob Oliver credit, but there's probably more to the story, you know?
Oliver was at the study session, which is why he picked up the story of city council and the mayor. And by the way, he's not going to brew his own beer alone. He says he's got handshake deals with distributors. Oh, no, he already has handshakes, with distributors to sell his beer at local bars. So if you start drinking at his place and you want more, you can go to another bar. Maybe the former Chelly's will have his beer next door.
Don't you remember? I thought you were the one that told me that Chelly's was being courted by a microbrewery. I swear that was the original place that we were talking about.
I think it might have been a possibility at one time, but that was before this other idea came up. And it's clearly going to be a cigar bar now. Gnar Bar is going to be the new name.
That's right. Yeah, okay. All right. You know what? I think I'm getting my stories confused.
Yes.
All right. Forget I'm even here, Jay.
Okay. We're going back to more of the new WHFR Journal here today with other stories from the paper. In that Sunday press and guide that I did receive, there's a little dispute going on. We always like to do education news about local education, about AP grading policy. Now, AP is the acronym for
Advanced Placement.
Advanced Placement in high schools, where you can take classes to either allow you in more quickly or to not have to take classes at college. Like you do well in physics, you don't have to take their first physics class. You just go right on to take the second one if you're into science and math, of course. Something like that. Now, I took in my little high school of Flat Rock. They had an experimental program, but it was real, in 63, 64, and you took not just advanced placement, you took the college class in your high school.
Okay.
They actually sent Eastern Michigan University English professors there, and I took their basic composition class in the high school.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Instead of senior English.
Right.
Because I didn't need it. I was valedictorian anyway, we took that, and I actually got the 3 hours credit Eastern Michigan transcript. And so, as it turned out, I didn't go to Eastern. I went to Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, but I didn't have to take the intro class from them. Of course, that was because they didn't have it.
At Oakland?
They didn't have English composition then at Oakland University.
What did you take for your...
Okay, what? Radical. Oh. Oakland University in the 60s. They're called a brain school. Everybody in their first two semesters had to take an intensive seminar, their choice, in history or science or sociology or psychology, and they had all these choices. In that seminar, which was only 12 people, you could take it as a lecture, you could take it as discussion, and a lecture would be like 50, 60 people, a lecture would be like 20 or 30, or take it as a seminar, because it gets more intense and more interactive the fewer the people, right?
Sure, absolutely.
The one you chose for the seminar, they promised you had to write a paper a week, a 500-word essay a week. And so even though they weren't certified as an English professor, they had to actually check your essays, their seminar sections. So it was a college-wide responsibility to teach English composition and critical thinking, but you got to choose the area that you wanted to think critically and write critically about.
So the English was almost a byproduct of your other studies.
There was an English department, but that was just for the majors later that wanted to study Shakespeare and Chaucer.
Oh, sure, there was
the usual advanced English, but not English composition, because they said, well, everybody has to take it under some one area or another.
Sure.
And I love that.
Your teachers, were they qualified?
I took it under history. Oh, yeah. We got full PhDs. They didn't believe in grad students.
Okay.
So we had full PhDs, and they were hired knowing they'd have to teach the seminars with a lot of papers. And so everybody loved it. And of course, they've changed it. And they have their own English comp department now. And it's for a number of reasons. Primarily like us, we have something like over half of the sections that are taught in English are remedial.
Right.
Which is, I just heard the term this week, it's called backstopping the high schools.
Yeah.
When they can't teach the basic English, then we teach it at community colleges when they get here. And it's not college level No, it's trying to make up for all the English they didn't learn. And a few of our classes in English, remedial English, they go back to fourth grade level.
Especially for...
So we're not just backstopping the high schools, we're backstopping...
Elementary schools.
Yeah, all the way back to elementary.
And then a lot of those would be English as a second language students, I would think.
Well, we have those too here, yeah. But that's not the
that's not the remedial part.
The vast majority of people in remedial English, because we have ESL classes. So if they are very, very weak in what we might call native or colloquial English, and they may or may not, we give them a test.
Sure.
Then they would go into ESL classes to help kickstart them there. So I wouldn't call those remedial. Those are just kickstart,
right.
Learning English and learning composition and at the same time. But so most everybody in our remedial English program below college level here, and it's over half of the sections we teach in English here, it's just because the lower schools, wherever they came from, it was Detroit, Dearborn, if they didn't get it, and by test, you know, we test them when they get here, and we're not just looking at where they came from. If they didn't get it, then they're going to get it here, or they won't get a degree here.
And what's interesting is they're called developmental classes. They do
sometimes
not,
called,
they do not count toward your prereqs.
No.
So you're taking...
They're not part of the 60 hours for the typical two-year degree.
Some of them are pass or fail. There's no grade.
Right.
It's a very interesting... I mean, it's necessary. I mean, it's proven
absolutely.
That it's necessary.
Well, but, who else is going to do it? I mean, how can we... If we just let them directly into college-level English, which has always been the same sort of intensity of experience and quality expectations, for example, in English 131, the assumption is when you write a 500-word essay, just one of them, none of the words will be spelled incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. That's a fair assumption, especially with computers.
None of the words. And, of course, they all have to be the right word, so your spell check, when it finds the wrong word that it thinks it is and spells it correctly, then that's considered the wrong word, so
right.
You still fail there. But there's ideas and there's an intensity, and we can't dumb down college. That's not right.
No.
And I think we really have over 50 years anyway. But no, these developmental, that's probably better than remedial, I guess. Remedial is a sort of an insulting term.
I know you don't mean it that way.
It used to be called that. I'm
sure.
Sorry. But yeah, developmental. But there's a lot of development that's required. Why? Because the public schools... and even some of the charter schools and private schools at the lower levels aren't doing their job. They're giving the degrees, but they haven't done, they haven't gotten the proficiency to the students in English and math and sometimes even science, because we have placement tests for all those areas here. And yes, if they don't place high enough to begin to have what's called entry-level ability,
right,
then they have to go to the developmental classes in those areas, and they get credit on their transcript here, but not for transfer.
Right. And think about if the teachers were forced to teach all the students, even some of the developmental students, that would really slow down the whole process for everybody. Back to your original thing, I took three AP classes in high school, English, French, and history. And I was able to, I didn't have to take those classes at the very, very beginning of my college career.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
Well, here's the debate, finally getting back to the story. here's the debate in Dearborn. And there's different sides, and they debated it. Katie Hetrick, as the reporter for being at the Dearborn School Board, here's the issue. They promise a good class grade for students who do well on a national advanced placement test. So they take the class, they take the national advanced placement test, and they do well on the test, they automatically get a good grade, and I don't know how good it's going to be, but they get a good grade in the high school class. So at least one administrator said that the policy seems to encourage students to master the material and thus do well on the test, and isn't that the point of the class? But the teachers' union, and here's an example of teachers' union that's concerned about real education. People always think, oh, unions, they're never concerned about anything but their own pockets,
right.
You know, how much money they're making. Here's the teachers' union that is actually taking the side of real education and more complete education, at least. The teachers' union says the policy permits students to ignore classroom rules and requirements and fails to prepare them for life after high school with skills such as responsibility, cooperation, and time management.
Because all they're doing is focusing on studying for one
test. Teaching for the test.
Yeah. And I have to agree with the union. Mm-hmm. I have to, because it's the daily stuff that develops the habits and the like you said, the cooperation and teamwork.
And you're graded on the your daily achievements.
Right.
Too.
Which is short-term steps.
Right.
And there's a heck of a lot. Okay, I study for the test and I don't do, I had a bad night. I didn't feel well. I took the test. I didn't do well. Boy, that was my one shot. On a daily basis, though, I can, you know, I'm looking the direction I'm going and I can adjust.
See, one of the reasons for this is the teacher contract from December 2012 gives teachers the right to set the final grade.
Okay.
For the classes they teach. That's academic freedom. But
sure.
That's, you know, is the board supposed to force a grade on the teacher?
Right.
Because of a national test they took that had nothing to do with the classroom? I think that's just wrong. And so the board is also considering whether or not they overstepped what they actually agreed to do, which is give the teachers the right to choose the grade, which it's always been that way. I mean, back in December 2012. And so the policy, though, that they have right now says students who get a 4 or 5 on the national AP test, which I assume is the out of five?
Yes.
Okay. Out of five possible. We'll receive an A for the class, and those with a 3 would get at least a B. Grades are not lowered for poor test results.
So whatever you did in the classroom is still based on... Okay, that knocks out my argument. If you don't do well on the test...
Well, I don't know what grade they get if they got a lowered... I mean, who decides the grade you get in the class if you didn't get at least a 3... on the AP test. I assume that it goes back to the teacher.
It's like, traditionally, what I had to do was take the class for my junior and senior years of college or high school, and then at the end of my senior year, I took the test that they're talking about. Now, let me ask you something. Would you have a problem if somebody did not take advanced placement classes but took the advanced placement test and did well? Would you have a problem with them foregoing college, entry-level college classes? In other words, they didn't take AP class. They're just naturally intelligent. So they took the test. Would you, as an educator, have a problem with that? Would you let them forego taking the classes because they did well on the test?
Well, we haven't done that here. In my experience in the telecom area, for example, Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts, mm-hmm. or Media Arts now it's called.
I'm familiar with their work.
Out in Southfield, I think. It's great. It's a 10-month program in basic skills that people going into what's now called the media arts, we still call it telecommunications, need. But it's not a college experience. It's only classes that relate to that specific field of study.
Vocational.
Yeah. And of course, that brings up another issue, too, that's being debated constantly in legislatures, in our state legislature, but even nationally, that some of these legislatures say, well, you know, colleges shouldn't teach anything that doesn't lead to a job. Well, I guess we don't teach them English or math, or unless they're going to go into mathematics, but is that a job these days?
I'm a writer. I don't need to take math or science then.
That's so crazy. The so-called liberal arts are probably more essential to someone in a fast-changing world.
Sure.
It gives you the survival skills to investigate almost any job.
That's true.
Or, you know, do you know politics? Do you know sociology, psychology, history? These are things that if you know those areas, and of course, how to write in English, then you can pick up these extra so-called vocational classes at any time and understand and comprehend them and incorporate them into your complete body of knowledge and your skills. But just to have the skills for a job... And that's it. What happens when the job is gone?
It's very short-sighted.
In this world today, with everything changing so quickly,
right.
Technology changing alone, the jobs are going to keep changing.
Sure.
So, well, we'll just get an upgraded class to stay in the same job. The same job won't necessarily be there next year.
Right. That's very true.
You know, some robot's going to take it or something. You know, you have to have this. I'm a real believer in liberal arts education and or general ed, as they call it.
Sure.
And anybody that's gone through it will speak from experience, even though they may be out of work currently, but they will say that there's a value there, and they're one step up on the people that just came out of a vocational program alone. Well, anyway, back to Specs Howard. They came to us, as they've come to many other schools around here, and said, if somebody gets a Specs degree from us, you don't really have to teach them anything down there at Henry Ford Community College in telecom. Just give credit. Degree credit for everything that we taught. And VocTech schools are not accredited in the same way.
Right.
Okay, so that would be a special thing for us to say. And some schools, I won't mention this area, give some credit. But we looked at the content of what they learn in those classes. They're all introductory level classes. But in fact, for many years, and still in many ways, our direct teaching experience is better than some of Specs Howard's programs, if you look at class by class. So we said, okay, we'll allow them advanced placement, but we're not for some, but not for all, but they don't get any credit. So they still need 60 hours, either taking even more advanced classes in telecom here or in other areas to balance out their education. It can even be general ed. So yes, we've accepted advanced placement at the college. It's department by department here. I don't think we even have an automatic policy college-wide.
Okay.
But each department has had to decide if they're going to accept any. For years, and I've been here for more than 40 years at the college, we refused any advanced placement, period. Okay, that's why we still don't have a college policy for automatically accepting them.
Okay.
Because we said, look, okay, so they did well on a test. Can they get through the whole class with all those assignments and all the twists and turns of learning that comes up in a class? Just because they have content knowledge enough to pass a two-hour test doesn't mean they know that topic in the ins and outs that a 47 contact hour and another 100-plus homework hours would equal.
That answers my question.
So that's always been the historical perspective about AP here at the college. But individual areas will consider things and have set up some, like we do have, I think, still ongoing. And Specs Howard keeps calling the head of the telecom area for a better deal. But until they change their program, we don't find everything they do that equal. And again, it's the experience. We've actually looked at the number of hours that they're in class at Specs for each of their classes. So just because they have an introduction to audio, let's say, it's not as long as ours.
Right.
It's not as intense. They don't use the same textbook at all. And they don't have as many lab projects.
Right.
So, okay, they know some stuff, but they don't know everything that they would know if they take the same class from us.
But even here isn't enough. And I'm not saying,
no.
I love the college.
No,
this is a really good, heck of a beginning.
Right.
But what you need to really further yourself is either on-the-job experience or further education.
Right. I just hope that the Board of Ed does the right thing and agree that the teachers, and they gave them the right in the contract, have the right say there. But the board's position, according to Glenn Maleko, he's Executive Director of Staff and Student Services, speaking for the administration, he says, the board has the right to create marking systems. He said, we're not going to be an individual teacher and saying you must change a student's grade. Well, isn't that the same thing? Yeah, they have marking systems. They can go from pass-fail to A to E.
Right.
But it's the teacher who, working on class guidelines and outlines and requirements for what that class has to accomplish, that makes the assessment of how successful the students have been.
Right.
I mean, that's what you have teachers for.
Yep. And they were more qualified because they're dealing with these students on a regular basis.
Well, and they've actually got the degrees in those subject areas themselves.
Hopefully.
I don't know, Mr. Maletko, have you got a degree in some of these AP areas? I doubt it. So there.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, so we'll see where that goes. That's an important issue. I know it's sort of internal, but...
Well, it's a big deal for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Could mean, it's money savings and time savings. We have Mr. Hightower coming
up. Well, actually, I'm going to go to a commentary for 3 minutes instead of 4 minutes of Hightower from Jack Lessenberry.
All right.
Again, from Michigan Radio. He has these podcasts pretty much every day. And this one was from yesterday. And this talks about funding of higher education. And we get up to money coming from the state because Snyder has some had his budget proposal for next year sort of finalized, and he announced that this week. And
nice
we have
segue.
Some comments from Duraney and so
yeah.
on.
But
here's Jack Lessenberry talking about starving our futures in Michigan.
Yesterday, I talked about the challenges the University of Michigan's new president faces. One of those is, of course, the fact that it's becoming increasingly difficult to afford an education. That provoked a lot of reaction, and I was surprised by the tone of a lot of it. Specifically, many people feel that, especially with a lagging economy, it makes no sense for students to study things that won't clearly pay off in a job. There's nothing wrong with art appreciation. There are plenty of books, DVDs, and YouTube clips out there, one man said. But he thought it was outrageous that someone would spend a vast amount of money on something that will turn out to be a nice hobby and then complain about the lack of job opportunities. He also seemed to think that offering degrees that didn't immediately promise well-paying jobs were a waste of taxpayer dollars, adding, "We definitely don't need multiple universities offering the same marginal degree." Well, I can tell you that many immigrants to this country feel the same way. Just go to graduation ceremonies at nearly any Michigan university and see who gets degrees in what. In Wayne State, the list of engineering grads, for example, are always dominated by students with Asian and Arabic names. Their parents expect education to be an investment that will pay off in the ability to make a living. This isn't exactly a new idea. During the American Revolution, John Adams wrote, "I must study politics and war so that my sons may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy. My sons ought to study mathematics and philosophy, commerce and agriculture, in order to give their children a right to study painting, poetry, music, architecture, statuary, tapestry, and porcelain." Art appreciation, in other words. Actually, I've never met anyone with a degree in art appreciation, but I've met many people in what you might call practical occupations who are far deeper and better at what they did because they'd learned to appreciate art. Yes, people need a way to earn a living. But those who sneer at liberal arts are forgetting two things. First, education is more than narrow technical knowledge. The Taliban has engineers. Education is about the entire human being reaching their full potential. Besides, in my experience, not very many 18 to 22-year-olds know what their life's work should be. To an extent, arguing about what students should study is a distraction from the main point, best expressed to me yesterday by former Congressman and State Senator Joe Schwartz. Schwartz, a Republican, chaired the Senate Higher Education Committee for years. Yesterday, he said, "It is truly difficult for me to understand why the legislature and the governor continue to believe Michigan can continue to grossly underfund higher ed." A physician himself, Schwartz added, "How the hell can we make the claim that Michigan absolutely must have more qualified college grads for high-skilled jobs, then turn around and beggar the self-same universities to train the people we need?" That's the real problem, not what students are studying. You don't have to be Socrates to see that we're starving our own future, and doing so at our own peril.
Jack Lesenberry, and again, that's Michigan Radio, michiganradio.com, and you can sign up for those podcasts every day. Yeah, coming direct to you. I get it through my iTunes player on my machine, but, there it is. He sounds like such a nice guy on Michigan Public Radio, you know? In fact, of course, in the Metro Times, that venue allows him to go a little bit crazy. We want to compliment Jack Lesenberry. He's also an adjunct instructor down at Wayne State University. But we want to compliment him on getting through 1,000 editorials for the Metro Times. This week is his 1,000th editorial. It must have been tough to do because he remembered the exact number and when he started. Or maybe he counted up his paychecks because apparently they actually pay him for this. Unbelievable. But, he's very controversial, and he does, we love to read his editorials, whether we use them on this show or not, weekly, because they stimulate you to think. And even some of the people online that make comments stimulate to think about what he wrote, too. Well, and it's very similar, since he was thinking of similar things this week. He's talking about Republican tax cut insanity. So we'll just feature a little bit of this. From his printed editorial in the Times Herald. "Our lawmakers want to give us an election year tax cut. Gotta love them, especially the Republicans. They're always looking out for us little guys. Take stick Senator Jack Brandenburg, for example, from Harrison Township. Boat Town, in other words, up in Macomb County. Brandenburg has a bill that would reduce the state income tax by 0.1% each year for the next 3 years. Why? Says Lesenberry. Imagine the riches you'll realize. Why, if you have taxable income of $30,000, you might save $30. $30? That would mean a winter vacation in Florida for most of us. No doubt. With lobster thermidor every night." And of course, that's satire, folks. Overstatement? Okay, it's called satire. "Brandy's bill sailed through the Senate Finance Committee with only sour old Democrats opposing it." Quote, said his buddy, Senator Dave Robinson of Grand Blanc Township, We have a moral obligation to return dollars to the taxpaying public at every opportunity, unquote. What a hero, says Lessenberry. Actually, what utter and complete, and he uses a term for it, a descriptive term that we can't use, according to FCC regulations, on this show. So you can fill in the blank there. Whenever you think our lawmakers couldn't possibly come up with another way to ruin our state and wreck its ability to be competitive and serve its citizens, they surprise you. Cutting taxes would be the most irresponsible thing they could possibly do. Education, and he was just talking about that in his recorded podcast, classroom education, not pension funds, is woefully underfunded. And let me just say my opinion here, Dennis, as an aside. The pension funds that they're restoring were pension funds that were promised the teachers in the first place.
Right.
So it's like a prior commitment, folks, which they weren't going to honor for a while. And so, okay, so it's not like giving the teachers more money here. It's like restoring what you promised them would be there for them in the first place. But has there been any more money, the point here, for classroom education to improve the quality of education, like maybe pay for some school supplies, like papers and pens for the kids, or oh my God, a computer or two for them,
right,
or wireless internet to allow facilities for the computers to actually do something for the students? No, not another dime, okay, has been put into the budget by Governor Snyder in his proposals of this week anyway. I mean, it's not a done deal yet, but... No, he's only proposing to make up for the pension funds that were in question before. Anyway, so this tax cut, says Lessenberry, would be utterly meaningless to most people, except as it hurts them. Our state, he goes on to say, and I'm going to conclude with this, doesn't have enough money to do what it needs to maintain the public good now. This would leave it with considerably less, if they use it for these so-called tax cuts, possibly almost $1 billion less a year, according to an analysis by the Senate Fiscal Agency itself, if they cut those, that 0.1%. So go from 4% sales tax to 3.9%. Okay? And that's $1 billion lost.
Wow.
Yeah. And that they might use for something that we really need it. And what about our roads? Okay? And the more we wait to fix them, the more it'll cost. Legislature has decided don't do anything about it. Okay? And he mentions, as I did last week, you know, I said that my barber, my hairstylist, he just had his Jeep tire replaced because...
Potholes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Lessenberry comments here, and also on his podcast earlier this week. He says, I have a direct personal interest in fixing the roads. So do you, whether you realize it or not. 2 weeks ago, driving on Woodward Avenue in Royal Oak, I hit a pothole that completely destroyed a fairly new tire. No way I could have swerved to miss it. It was dark, there was lots of traffic, and I never saw it. Yeah, that's what he says. Replacing the tire cost me $250. Must have been a big honking SUV or something,
yeah.
Not to mention time and aggravation. Days later, he talked to Mary Lou. He says, I talked to Mary Lou Ziev, a longtime fundraiser for the arts who had just had the same experience in her Cadillac on Maple Road in Birmingham. Why do I mention the location? Simply to show that we weren't off-roading it or zipping around the worst parts of the neglected and crumbling hood.
Right.
Instead, both of us lost relatively new tires on nice cars in the heart of affluent, prosperous suburbia. My only surprise is that I haven't lost the other three tires on Detroit streets, like when he's commuting to Wayne State to teach his class. He says, my guess, we're among thousands who have suffered the same fate or worse this winter. Fortunately, we could both afford to get our cars fixed. A lot of people really can't, even though a lot more of them are about to suffer from one of Michigan's atrocious roads. Well, yeah, and of course you could say, well, the rich people... Yeah, let them get new tires. But as he's saying, the poor people, because we don't have a decent metro transit system, any reliable one, who are able to get their cars, used cars, older cars, or trying to keep them going, they've got to get stuck with paying for new tires too.
Yeah.
So it's hurting all of us, and especially the poor people are being hurt the most here.
Good for him for pointing that out.
Yeah, and you know, it just... We're not just for the roads, it's for, like, education, but we've already talked about that. It's, you know, get the money going in the right place. I know it's an election year, and it'll make the Republican, this State Senator Jack Brandenburg from Harrison Township, wherever the heck that is, I can put down the people up north in Macomb County because I'm not them, and they're not me, and I don't vote for them, see, so they don't care about me.
And they can't
anyway.
Hear you anyway.
No, I mean... They'll be reelected because, oh, they cut taxes.
Yep.
And then everybody else, they don't have a concern at all about what's happening in the state as a whole, much less the Detroit area specifically. So we I certainly do hope that the $350 million raised from donors Governor Snyder proposed to help the Detroit pension funds from being cut too much in their bailout effort will stay in there, and that will happen. Our Representative George Duraney has a press release on this, just came out, specifically in regard to that. He said, and he's such a nice guy, he's actually saying, well, good for the governor for increasing school funding and providing tax relief to the people that have had their taxes raised for the past few years. That's really nice. But then he points out in the second paragraph, as well he should, after all, he's a Democrat, our classrooms are still facing $300 less in per pupil funding, and the school aid fund money going to the K-12 schools has also been reduced. And, as I mentioned last week in my situation, senior citizens still dealing with the heavy burden of a new retirement tax that we never expected, even though we've already been retired, and working Michigan families are still reeling from the loss of other deductions and credits, such as the earned income tax credit and the $600 child tax deduction, which is also gone. And of course, he says we've got to reestablish those things. So yeah, it's wonderful we got a tax relief, but we didn't really get more money for education where it matters. And there's some priorities we've got to look at here. Here's one of those opinions, Dennis. What about raising taxes on the rich?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Like graduated?
Socialism? I don't think so. It's absolutely crazy that with the success of people in the so-called 1% in Michigan that they've had in the last 10 years, the percent of increase in their incomes has been so huge, they could afford paying a little more to help balance the playing field for the rest of us. And that's what I'm talking about, balancing the playing field. Give opportunity in healthcare, in education, job training, therefore, so that people can get jobs and have a living. You know, if you have 99% of the people that are starving and out of work, and it isn't that we aren't there yet, but it's sure getting close to an awful lot of unemployed and people who have just given up on work, and are hoping the welfare will continue for a while, which is not the right approach, then we're a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. So, I'm sure Duraney, as he said here in the press release, is for reestablishing the money for these things. Does he propose anything like upping taxes? I mean, even the sales tax. Who pays the most in sales taxes? The people that buy the most. Mm-hmm. Who pays the most in gasoline taxes? The people that drive the most. Mm-hmm. And the people that got the big honking cars, like Lessenberry and his friend, who probably only get 15 or 10 miles to a gallon or something like that. Well, even Lessenberry, I didn't read that part of it, but he said, that's fine, I understand. If you raise the gas tax to help repair the roads, then those of us that drive the bigger cars that get less gas economy, we deserve to pay higher taxes on the gas because we use more. But I know the poor people, they'll have to pay higher gas tax too. But give them that earned income credit. Give them their child deduction back. You know, that'll help compensate for the extra gas taxes or income tax. I didn't mention that, but sales tax and then income tax. Graduate. That means set different levels, different percentages for people at different income levels. Okay? Right now, it's a flat tax.
But doesn't that go against the Constitution? I thought the graduated tax was...
Well, let's amend the Constitution.
Well, I mean, that's what we'd have to do.
Come on. I mean, seriously. Right. It's, you know, there are several ways where the people that spend the most and make the most should be able to pay back more than what they're paying now.
And a fair tax would not require an amendment.
Well, that's a whole other issue.
Sure.
We're talking about the capital F, capital T, fair tax.
That's right.
And we're talking about a Michigan fair tax that we have been for years on the show. Maybe we'll get some fair tax people back on to speak about that.
Near April.
Right. When everybody hates taxes, but by May, nobody ever does anything about it.
That's right.
So it's terrible.
Yep.
But Democrats, Republicans talking about reforming the taxes in Michigan and getting more money from the people that have the most money and have gotten a ton more money in the last 10 years and should pay some of that back to the state services? No. Nobody's proposing any of that. It's election year, you know. And so I think they should all be kicked out unless they come up with ideas that will really fix things.
All right.
So... That disclaimer we already did, right?
We did that a couple times.
Yeah, okay. It was 12 minutes to go before Highway 61, and we'll be starting that on time today. Joanne is in the house.
Yes.
Yes, Joanne is here.
Already.
So, yeah, already. Okay, so let's move on to the few other stories we have to finish off.
Well, there's a couple things going on. I don't know if you wanted to cover them. This right here is important. The public is invited into the 26th Annual Mayor Arts Awards ceremony. This is honoring Dearborn artists and celebrating the art community. That's at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, February 12th, at the Michael A. Guido Theater in the Ford Community Performing Arts. That's free, completely free. Mm-hmm. And the ceremony basically puts a spotlight on individuals who have enriched the cultural arts experience in Dearborn with their talent. And it says the honorees are outstanding artists, educators, volunteers, or art patrons. Mayor O'Reilly will present the Mayor Arts Award to outgoing DCAC Executive Director Stella Green. And also the other outstanding honorees will be an award-winning photographer, Lance Alexander Rossi, music teachers, choral supporters, choral music supporters, and so on. Anyway, that is Wednesday, February 12th, 7:30 p.m. at the Michael Guido Theater.
As long as you started on this, we'll go backwards in time from, sure. That's next Wednesday, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah. Tonight.
Oh,
if good. You're listening to the show live today, Friday night, don't have anything to do, want to be nice and warm in a beautiful auditorium, the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra is having its French Connection night.
That's kind of cool.
So yeah. It's not like the movie, like the gangster, the drug running gangsters.
Gene Hackman,
but
right?
Yeah, Gene, he was in both one and two. But anyway, it says, savor an elegant, refreshing, colorful Dearborn Symphony Orchestra program by French composers Debussy, Ravel, and Saint-Saëns. So. Who I think are going to be there live tonight. They're all passed away, but still, all very famous composers from that period, the so-called Romance period of classical music. And so, what a sort of great advanced concert to take your honey to for Valentine's Day.
Sure.
If you don't have an idea for next week or next weekend, take her tonight and say, this is an advanced Valentine present.
And if you don't have a honey, well, you know what you have to do.
Yeah, find a honey.
Find a honey.
Just get in the mood anyway. That'll help you find a honey.
Exactly.
Tickets are ranging from $15 to $30 as usual. They're available by calling the Symphony office or the Theater Box office, or go to DearbornSymphony.org for more information. Remember, at 7 p.m., that starts at 8, but 7 p.m., there's always, an hour early, an insightful and humorous free preview of the evening's music. So a little music history, a little background, and it's quite entertaining, I understand, by musician, former school teacher, I think, music teacher here in Dearborn, James Walters. So he's been doing that for years and years, so he's probably got some great stories that he will tell about Debussy and Ravel and Saint-Saëns. Okay. And, of course, under the baton of conductor Kypros Markou, the night's program begins with the prelude to Afternoon of a Faun from Debussy, and Ravel's exotic Zigane, and Saint-Saëns' Havanais. And there will be acclaimed violin virtuoso, Yehonatan Berek. He's got a picture here, a color picture from the website, and I can't show you that over radio. But and Saint-Saëns' majestic Third Symphony is the big climax for a spectacular evening. So I hope you can make it to it. Yes, it's $15 to $30 per seat, but what a great experience. And it's only about once a month, about 8 or 9 times a year. Help support the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra at the Center, of course, Dearborn Center.
Okay, and in partnership with the Center for Michigan, which is a nonprofit and nonpartisan think and do tank located in Ann Arbor, the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights has volunteered to convene a group of 25 to 50 people for a 90-minute discussion. And this is the purpose of this is to set the League of Women Voters agenda for Michigan in 2014. This is called the Community Community Conversations. It is a week from tomorrow, Saturday, February 15th. 2014, and that's at the Christ Episcopal Church, 120 North Military in Dearborn. The time is from 10 to 11:30 in the morning, and the conversations are going to be things like, going to ask things like how you feel about Michigan today, about education, economy and prosperity, the quality of life in Michigan, and public money priorities. For more information, you can go to thecenterformichigan.net. There you go. Thanks, Mary Jo, for that.
Yep. Gary Warrenchuk, who we think is going to be actually be on the show. It's been a while since the Wayne County Commissioner from this area, who has been the Wayne County Commission Chairman, or Chairperson, as I prefer to say. He's elected from the cities of Allen Park and Dearborn. That's the sort of district that his commissioner position comes from. He has a regular email, and you can get that by just going to his at the WayneCounty.com website. Look up Warunchak and just ask to get a regular email. So, of course, the one I just got from February 1st, last Saturday, he's saying, don't blame us for all the bad roads. Okay. Well, no, he's very politic about it. Of course, they're doing the best they can, but not all the roads are Wayne County roads. So you got to know who to blame here. Although I blame Mother Nature, or actually global warming, which causes these freakish severe weather changes, like the polar vortex. I love that concept.
You like that one?
Oh, that's so scary.
That's the name of a sci-fi movie.
It should be, yes, if it isn't. So which roads are Wayne County's responsibility? Some of the more heavily traveled roads are the county's responsibility. It's true. And in this email, you could click for a listing of the roads in Allen Park and Dearborn that are owned, operated, and maintained by Wayne County Department of Public Services, as well as a listing of state freeways and trunk lines. They also, he wanted to say here, Wayne County has a 24-hour hotline for reporting road hazards, such as a major pothole. Does Lessenberry know about that?
I think he does now.
Or a traffic signal that is not functioning properly. Boy, there's been several of those. I've seen traffic signals out, and they're not, you know, they're frozen, or, I mean, they're swinging up there on their wires, but so many that haven't been functioning properly. I mean, I think the cold can affect the electrical circuits.
Oh, of course.
You know, if there's integrated circuit boards or something, they can freeze those suckers. You know, that's why you're not supposed to freeze a computer. Computer doesn't work below 32.
Right.
And it likes to have temperature-controlled things. That's because its circuit boards are very sensitive. And there's a little circuit board in those lights up there that it's a timer. In fact, it's not a mechanical timer. That would even be failed more often. But it's a circuit board that counts how many seconds it's going to be on or off. So it gets too cold. Well, there you go. Also, that number is known as, because you won't remember the number, right, is 888 Road Crew. That's the Wayne County 24-hour hotline for reporting potholes, any traffic signals, or any road hazards, like some big truck dumped a load of toxic waste or something, whatever. So 888 Road Crew.
That's an extra number, isn't it? Road Crew. No, I mean, I'm sure that's right, but that last W is worthless.
That's right, it is.
It's not going anywhere.
That's right. That's too many punches. But you can remember it. Probably the W won't hurt. So.
No, okay. It won't hurt. It wouldn't tell you.
Yeah.
All right.
So check out their that, and I'm sure Gary will talk about many other things when he gets here on the Journal next.
I do want to bring up that on Tuesday at 1 o'clock we'll have a Dearborn Heights News and Views with Dearborn Heights Councilman Ned Apigian, and he's also a WHFR staff member.
Yes.
And we will be speaking to Councilwoman Marge Horvath, Dearborn Heights Councilwoman, on this particular show.
How many years has she been with the council?
Long
she's
time.
Got quite a career there.
She does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to listen to the show.
No, you got to listen to the show. And it's of course, our Tuesday forums are always podcast. This last Tuesday, there was a problem getting the show on in a timely fashion. And it's there on our website, whfr.fm. Click on Talk Shows. There's three buttons in the middle. Click on Talk Shows. Go to Tuesday Forum and then pick the date. If it's like last Tuesday was We Are Not Alone, our local show about UFOs. Yeah, our locally hosted show about UFOs. And it was a great show. And even just like the WHFR Journal, we're a talk show and we're based, we're under the Journal button under Talk Shows. And you can listen to this show. And it's like last week's show. I especially saved the whole file. It was an hour and 12 minutes. We ran over a little bit because of the special interview with the executive editor of Automobile Magazine. So I got the whole thing there. Yeah. So if you didn't get a chance to hear the end of that, you say, well, the podcast would have kicked out. Well, I made sure that the podcast for We Are Not Alone, the Tuesday Forum last week and last Friday, are complete. So that's a good resource if you can't listen to the Dearborn Heights News and Views next Tuesday or any Tuesday. They're on, we try to do them every second Tuesday of the month.
That's right.
And so next Tuesday, the 10th?
11th. The 11th.
The 11th, yes.
And let me just, I don't know if we're going to end with this, but this is really important. The Dearborn, the Library and Lending Cooperative Agreement between the City of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights has gone so well, that's being extended. So they've tacked on five more years, extended the agreement for five more years till March 2019. And what this is, residents in Dearborn and residents in Dearborn Heights who have library cards for their respective cities can use them in either city. So there's three libraries in Dearborn and two in Dearborn Heights. You can use them at any of those libraries, and I think that's an awesome thing. I do. And I would look forward to that, even more communities getting involved in something like that.
Yep, I agree. A little story that snuck by from mentioning was in last Sunday's paper, and it's not finalized yet, folks, but there was a preliminary reading, of the garage ordinance changes in Dearborn, and the Press and Guide says that those changes are likely to be approved at the next meeting, because it's already been read once, and they believe at the again, at the study session, that people in attendance were in from the council were all in a majority, and that should carry it. So that affects the garages that many people have been using for social gathering rooms.
Maybe and even
not
living in them.
And not cars.
Right.
And some of those people have trouble, by the way, in the last month and a half, and they've gotten those $40 tickets or $50 if they don't pay them in 3 days on the cars they left parked during a snow emergency, which are happening every couple of days now. So, but they can't pull their cars in far enough. They can't cover on the drive, they can't cover the sidewalks, and so they leave them out front because they've still got all their tables and chairs and whatever in their garages.
Maybe a pool table or a kitchen.
And so they're paying tickets now. I don't know what the percentage, but many of them who have been using their garages for that, and there's no room for their cars, now have trouble on these snow emergency days. So it's tough.
But this is a double whammy, because if this ordinance does in fact pass, then they have to repurpose their garages.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money and time.
Finally, I'll just mention, for more information, because, we all need more information, especially since we don't have Patch.com now. If you'd like to know what other political parties, I said, Democrats and Republicans don't even vote for them if they can't come up with new ideas that are really solutions for these problems, not just fooling around, as I said, moving chairs on the deck of the Titanic, rearranging deck chairs, that's the old line. Nothing very good when the boat's going down, the ship. Big boats are called ships,
yes.
Right? Okay, Libertarian Party. Ever heard of them? They're the third largest political party, organized running candidates everywhere in the U.S., including Michigan. You want more information about what they stand for, how they'd be different than Democrats, Republicans? Go to LP for Libertarian Party. LP.org. And what about Green Party United States? GPUS.org. Green Party, not the same as Libertarian Party. Oh, no. And they have ongoing, I get email from all of them, just because I want to know, they have ongoing statements about what they would propose if they were in office. And challenging stuff and different stuff. I don't know which would work better, but at least it's something that would get us off the dime and maybe actually take us in a better direction.
Because we know what's not working.
Yeah.
We can see that.
Yeah.
Right.
And right now, I'm sorry to say, we're talking about gridlock, but, Dems and Republicans together, even if they compromise, they're not coming up with real solutions to anything right now. So let's just keep at it. Be careful out there. There's still ice and snow around. But come back again next Friday for more of the new WHFR Journal. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Press and Guide. Thank you, Times Herald, and RIP.
Patch.com.
Here's Highway 61. WHFR Dearborn.